Real Nerds is a proud partner of the Denver Podcast Network. In the shadow of the mountains,
we speak.
Hello, everybody. I'm JD Lopez, the host of Left Hand, Right Brain. It's a free-flowing, wide-ranging conversation that I have with artists doing interesting and creative things here in Denver and beyond. We talk about their personal stories, break down their creative process, and what motivates them. Spoiler alert, it's mostly spite. We talk about all these things and more while kicking back, cracking wise, and always having a good time. You can find old episodes and everything you need to know at lefthandrightbrainpod.com.
Oh, hi podcast listeners. There's many ways you can listen to the Real Nerds podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Stitcher Radio. You want to send us a Twitter message? You can do that. It's so easy, at Real Nerds. Like us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. You can visit our website, realnerdspodcast.com, where there'll be a lot of articles for you to not only read, but to listen to our previous shows. You can also call us, 720-6NERDS5. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
I'm Andre Gower.
And I'm Ryan Lambert.
And you're listening to
Real Nerds Podcast.
Hey everybody, here's an exciting Real Nerds interview that we did at Denver Comic Con 2018. Hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to Real Nerds Podcast, live from Denver Comic Con 2018. I'm here with Brian Cummings. There you go.
Sorry, late lunch.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. My
Brian, something tells me you're a voice actor.
Really? Oh,
Brian's
no.
Here too.
I guess I'm going to give up that career as a pantomimist.
Kenny!
Okay.
I have a panel to go to in like 10 minutes, but I wanted to talk to you, so I'm going to hang out too. We're both with, you know, we'll co-host this one for a second. Yeah. So you're quite the talented voice actor. I looked at your IMDb page, and you have quite the range,
yes,
I guess is
yes.
the right way to say
that,
it.
I owe that to payoffs that I sent to IMDb. I didn't do that, no. The whole deal about what we do is that we show up every day, we do our best every day, and if you do it long enough, eventually somebody hires you, and then another person hires you. No, that's not totally true. I had, as a child, like a lot of kids, I was totally enthralled with television, but because I'm older than adverbs, my hero was a guy named Dawes Butler, who was the legendary Huckleberry Hound and Yogi Bear. He was Quick Draw McGraw and his sidekick, Baba Louie. He actually had this thing that he would do where he had been a stage performer and he would take a breath in the middle of one character before he cut to the other character. So if Quick Draw was saying, "I think they're over the hill," he'd take a breath before he was done. So Baba Louie could say, "Really over the hill?" And he would cut him off. And you could never realize it was the same guy doing the voice because he knew where to place his breath so he could go back and forth. He was brilliant.
It's amazing because like a lot of those people from that era that kind of come after Mel Blanc tend to have a lot more stage or even radio history behind them.
Oh, yeah.
So they're used to that. Got to get it in. So it's just like, it's all a matter of that single breath.
Because live, and actually the one of the Dawes story things that I find most interesting is that Mel Blanc got his star on Hollywood Boulevard. Dawes did not. And it all came from live radio. Dawes got hired to do a Jack Benny show.
Yes.
Live radio.
Yeah.
And during the rehearsal, he stumbled on one word, and basically Jack said, "I it's a risk. We can't have him stumbling on my show."
Yes, exactly.
So they basically fired him and replaced him with the number two guy, who was a guy named Mel Blanc, who became a star because of his exposure on the Jack Benny show.
Go on to do the Maxwell and the Mr. Professor LeBlanc and all
that. And yet, if you compare both of their work, Mel was a wonderful technician, did great voices. Dawes was more of the actor. Mel was a pyrotechnician.
Right.
And that both were valid, totally different approaches, and that's okay. But I think Dawes did. You got me all excited. Dawes, the first time I worked out with Dawes, I met him totally by accident. Went to his house, had a little studio behind, sat in the studio, and Dawes gave me an idea of the levels of a character. The man was probably in his early 60s at the time. Dawes did a Southern retarded boy. So you got this guy doing a younger age, doing retardation in the boy. But what made it powerful was the kid's talking to his sister and explaining that her boyfriend let him play the drums at a dance the night before. And he's trying to get out this story to her. But as he's telling the story, he starts to get all choked up. And the reason is the kid is trying to tell his sister that her boyfriend took a shortcut to their farm across the field where the bull was and has been gored by the bull and is bleeding in the field. And he taught me a really great lesson. It's much more powerful to want to cry but not be able to cry because you have to do something other than cry. So it's much more powerful to suppress the cry than just to cry your eyes out. It had dramatic levels to it that were phenomenal. And I think the difference between comparing Mel to Dawes is Mel's acting ability as well as his vocal versatility is what set him apart from some of the other actors of his age.
Absolutely.
Which is cool, you know? Okay,
yeah. And talking with you, for those who might not be familiar, if you want to run down a few that people might be more familiar with.
So when I first, I'm trying to think of the earliest thing. I don't have my IMDb page. First things I did, I'm trying to think. I did a show called Janna of the Jungle. It was just a walk-on part. It was great at Hanna-Barbera. First regular thing that I got was... Boy, this is terrible. I'm like vaping. I just went out and got a lot of things. So among my early shows, I did the Jetsons movie. I did a bunch of Hanna-Barbera stuff, guest stars on different things. I ended up doing Gummy Bears. I did some early episodes of Garfield as a guest walk-on. So you start doing a lot of guest stuff before you get the series. So I did DuckTales, the series. Actually, I had a weird thing. I was originally hired by Disney to be the parrot in Aladdin. And they did one of those things that sometimes happens. They did a concept change of the movie. They decided that some of it was a little too old line. They wanted to be a little more modern with the movie. So they got rid of my character. That was, initially, was kind of sad and heartbreaking because we had done the part and I had invested myself into it. About a month later, give or take, my memory, I was sent over to Disney to read for the Stove in Beauty and the Beast, and they were replacing a character. They basically said, we're recording 6 guys. Whoever gets the part, you'll find out when we release the movie in the fall. The movie came out in the fall, and there I was. So there's that, you know, that thrill of victory, the agony of defeat thing. You never know what's going to go on. G.I. Joe was one of those things where the cast was huge. I didn't think I'd get the part. Got the part and had a great run with G.I. Joe, which was a very large show with a lot of people in the cast. And so the added benefit was not only doing a great show, which is still iconic, but also the other actors on the show spent a lot of time interacting with each other, waiting to work, just because of the size of the cast.
How did you get into voice work then? Because it's not a traditional acting career.
Yeah, I lived in a very small state, and I always liked comedy. I watched comedy on TV, and I was enthralled by cartoons. I thought they were amazing. So Dawes was one of my heroes. I ended up in my hometown getting into radio. And while I liked on-the-air stuff, I liked doing the commercials because I could do character voices, which I loved. So I moved through different markets, and I ended up going from Nashville to Los Angeles. And when I got to L.A., I was doing syndicated radio, again doing lots of voices, and somebody sent me to an agency who had small kids. And I kind of just took one thing after the other, and I showed up, and I did auditions and started working. And then by total accident, I met Dawes. Dawes was my mentor. He came in to do a syndicated radio show. And I approached him and handed my demo. Said, "Mister, here is. Can you?" And he looked at me and said, "I'm going to really be tough." And he listened to it. And he then said, "You can be my student." And he had another person who was going to show up and be a second student. They never came by, but within 6 weeks, Corey Burton, who has become a major voiceover star, and a workshop from the San Fernando Valley showed up and kind of moved into Dawes' class. But I was a kid in a big city, broke with a very small job. And one of the great things about Dawes is, about the first year and a half, when he discovered I was broke, he said, "Don't stop coming. You're on scholarship." He didn't charge me a dime, and I came for free. And again, the levels of what this man taught, it's like the synapses of a guy who has used some strange materials in the past. That the things Dawes taught, kind of every once in a while, just kind of go, "Oh yeah," reach my consciousness, and I relearn them over and over again.
And there's definitely a level of fraternity within the voice artist community.
It's the best community. Everybody in this business is so supportive of each other. It's phenomenal. Yeah,
I've always marveled at it. You were talking about something off air that I wanted to bring up called the Herd.
The Denver?
The Denver Herd.
Yes.
Well, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure, sure. There are several people who moved from L.A. here because we're in the Denver market now.
In the Denver market.
Yeah, they got a markdown on bananas. Oh, different market. Okay, so no, we're in Denver, and a couple people who I've enjoyed working with over the years moved here, and it was not my idea. They started looking at a way to find voice talent here, kind of in the same way Second City became successful in Chicago. The idea is that there are people here who have talent and abilities who aren't necessarily going to go to Los Angeles, and that we have a very thriving community of people who create games. There are people moving here in media all over the place. So their idea was, why don't we train a group of people here who can become a performing group and go out after work from a market other than Los Angeles? And so that's been progressing. And I'm proud to say that I have been invited to be part of it. So I kind of helped to also develop the concepts. But it's a force in its own right. So we are doing some live kind of theater things based upon on old radio drama and going out after people who want to find talent locally that will work on the same par as people who are national. Now, let's face it, if you go to Los Angeles, most of the people who are acting in Los Angeles came from places like here and moved there because that's where the business was. So if there's business here, there's no reason why that can't happen here as well.
It's now that it's obviously it's changed now. Can you be a voice actor and live in a different state and still do the voice work, or is it still you have to go out there and be in their booth and work with them?
Two sides to that. Yes, there are more productions that are going to emanate from the major markets than there are here. True. On the other hand, the marketplace there is huge. The competition in numeric odds of the talents themselves are huge. So your odds of getting work there are you'll have more jobs to read for. You'll read against more people there. So as work becomes available in different places, look at all sorts of areas of media. People have shot on camera for years exclusively on the two coasts. And now you have production companies in New Mexico. I understand they're building a huge sound stage here with full sets. There's more and more production going into different places. So why not voiceover? Same principles apply and as it goes back and forth, we are much more mobile, so people can work remotely. You know, when like movies like Shrek, if you got a major celebrity, Eddie Murphy was when they did the first movie was on set someplace. And they literally had to record people in different places. So more and more that happens. If you do video games, chances are a lot of times, even though your character interacts with other character, part of the acting is not actually being able to work with the other actor at the time you record the character, but having that sense of character so you feel a communication in your creative, you know, vision inside without actually having the other actor there.
When you audition for a character, do they give you a sketch of the character or what he looks like, or they say, this is what his descriptions are, sound like him, go?
Yes, in both cases. it varies. And sometimes things are due to schedules. Sometimes the character they may have a sketch that's not fully developed, hasn't been approved, so they're not sure exactly how the character is going to look. You know, there's a classic story. If this is an urban legend, it's a good one. But so the story goes that the original Popeye was based on a heroic character of the day who was a very stoic character, Gary Cooper. They wanted a comedic Gary Cooper, and when they did the cartoons then, again, this could be wrong. If it's wrong, I apologize, but it's still a colorful story. So what I was told was that they had animated it first, and the character actor was going in to do the voice later, and it kind of died. It wasn't hilarious. And hence, they created the idea that Popeye could mumble. Since the animation was already locked in, they didn't have any lip flaps, so they had the mumbles working underneath, and it punched the character up, and from that point, it was part of the character.
That would be a great explanation as to why you see that the sink on all the old Popeye cartoons from the Fleischer Studios tend to have that, like,
yeah,
they're not only not right, but they do look like they're kind of almost blurring to a degree.
Sure.
Right before, you know, you get the action with Popeye punching Bluto.
Yeah, yeah. So again, most of the stuff we do, I did a video game last year that was a psycho, an animal that was a psycho, a very cuddly animal that was a serious killer. And when I asked them about when the game was going to be out, they said, we've been working on the creative on this game for almost 10 years now, and the game still isn't out. So the process goes through so many different stages of refinement, so many creative people. I respect that process. So sometimes you have everything really defined, but a lot of times you don't. When we did Fern Gully, I had a small part in Fern Gully right around the same time as we did Beauty and the Beast. And I had a former student. Andy and I worked together, and there was a nice chemistry between the two of us. So they invited us back the next day to record some kind of wild lines to punch up the movie. We went back the next day, and according to the union, we were paid to show up, but the guy said, sorry, but we just hired Robin Williams in the movie. We didn't know we could get him. He showed up at 6 o'clock last night. He left at 4 o'clock in the morning, and we're going to cut everybody's parts because we want to use as much of Robin as we possibly can because it was that good. So I think the people who do this, there's a lot of brains and a lot of creativity, and those who are the most successful are people who take advantage of what happens in addition to what they offer
because I'm a voice actor, you think that I would say it, but I don't have a script here, you guys.
Okay, so the creative process for them also allows them to be open to having inspirational things happen that they didn't expect, and those who take advantage of that oftentimes benefit from it.
Awesome. Woo. Well, Zach, continue. I have to go do a panel. Thank you for taking time to talk to us, sir.
And whenever somebody says I have to do a panel, I apologize. It's maybe the crude side of me. I just remind him, flush! Be sure to flush! Never mind. Cool.
Well, I have,
it's great.
I'll say hi to you a little later. Yeah. We're neighbors.
Yeah, we are. Cool.
I actually have a couple questions regarding that. Sure. This Denver Herd. Because, and I get this a lot of flack from the other real nerds here because I'm the sole old-time radio fan of the bunch. No joke, and I'll show you later. Yeah. This thing is only a sample of all the shows that I have, and they're all in the Audible app because I'm a huge Jack Benny fan.
Cool.
Burns
awesome.
And Allen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bob Hope seems to be hard to find nowadays for some reason unless you got the CD and the tapes, which I have in the storage.
Yes.
But one of the things that I find interesting about that history and the fact that you're attempting to restage it, and it's not the only one I've seen. I have seen others, whether it's
right.
the local sectors
right.
or just a Thrilling Adventure Hour, the podcast
sure.
that they did out of the Largo Theater, is that there's a resurgence of the Audible medium and
yes.
the need for voice actors within that. When you're with the planned radio adaptation, do you plan to try to create a comedy show, or do you try to also try to delve into the dramatic, I would say more adventure type or mystery even?
At this point, even when there are mysteries, because it's going to be in front of a live audience, unless you're going for an audience of aficionados, you always have to do that thing where you understand that even though we're recreating something from the period, everybody in this audience was not around during that period. Even it's kind of a hybrid. So we're going for the laugh as well as we're going for the feel, but it can't be exact. But like, if you want great stuff, you probably already have it. Go get the Arch Obler stuff. The horror stuff is great.
I have in my storage right now, but I've moved everything to my computer.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, so Arch Obler, Lights Out and stuff.
Yeah, Inside Out.
Suspense is the one that I've been listening to the most.
Yes.
And I know it's always the go-to for a lot of fans.
Sure.
And actually, I actually just finally listened to, for the first time, Jack Benny's one, which is Murder in G-Flat. Which is interesting, considering his ability as an actor, because we could call him a comedian, but he was really much more
sure.
of an actor that delivered funny lines.
Yeah.
Which is what, but I mean, regardless, one of the funniest men that ever lived.
And the thing about all of this stuff is, even back then, understand that there were fewer networks, but these people still had to bow to what the networks assumed were what the audience wanted to hear.
Right.
So typically, when somebody would break that mold, usually it took a lot to get someone to allow them to do that. And they still remember when Don Rickles did serious drama and was great at it.
Yeah.
And so the point is that people in the media determine kind of what your image is supposed to be that you work for, and you kind of have to, you have to kind of live up to that image, unfortunately, sometimes.
And to clarify for anyone listening who may not know, you had CBS, you had NBC Red and Blue, although that kind of got merged, I want to say around the early 40s, because of the monopolization of that particular sector of the business, because RCA was eating up everything.
Sure.
CBS didn't become the giant that it was in radio and television, for that matter, until about 1947.
Until later.
When William Paley came in and just scooped up everybody from NBC.
And I'm of the age where I worked on probably the last long-running radio drama, which was a Mutual broadcasting show called Zero Hour.
So NBS, too. Can't forget about Mutual either.
Yeah, yeah.
Which one was it?
So it was called Zero Hour. What was great about it for me was that the host of that was Rod Serling of Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
So I got to meet Mr. Sterling, and through that show, Dawes Butler was a guest actor, and that's how I met Dawes Butler, who became my mentor, as a matter of fact. So, yeah, they're all connections that are... Hey, if you look back, it's one of those things. Wasn't there a series called Connections? A lot of the, a lot of the happy accidents are the things that are the most interesting in your life. I was so obsessed with the shows that I thought were going to become legendary shows in my background, and the shows that I thought would be least likely to become huge were the ones that are the most remembered and highly praised. Treasured now.
I mean, like, and I'll point to one in your filmography is Gummy Bears.
Yeah.
I remember, like, my sister, like, I mean, if my sister were here and knew you were on Gummy Bears, she'd flip out. Like, I remember, like, watching that show, like, in the morning on Disney Channel.
Yeah.
And just, like, and when I'm watching those shows as a kid, or whether it's Saturday Looney Tunes and whatnot, like, it didn't occur to me, like, the level of acting that goes into it.
Sure.
And as you get older, you start realizing how that takes. But I do think that, like, bringing back that radio drama format and doing it on live stage, no less, is, like, an absolute testament to keeping that art form alive. It has become an artisan craft to a degree.
And even yet, there's even different dimensions. So today, everybody wants everything pulled back, more subtle. That's the mood of the time. That will eventually change because trends always change. So the radio drama, everybody realized that this is, it can't be, it has to be dramatic, but if it's real life, it loses the punch on the radio. Speakers weren't as good, you know, the quality of the medium had to be compensated for by the people involved in it. Then as things changed, we got to a point where in animation before we had digital animation, was still very limited in what you could portray visually, so you compensated from the shortcomings of the visual part of the medium by having the actors... Oh, I hit the microphone.
I'm sorry, Mike. Okay, you were so innocent.
Brad can't tell the difference.
Okay. It was an earthquake. The bird fell from the sky.
I'm so
it's
glad
not our
we
fault.
All survived that earthquake.
Okay. Yes. Well, so, but the deal is you played it a little more broadly because the characters weren't as animated. Now the characters are more animated, so they want you to pull back. And sometimes, as a general rule, sometimes I kind of feel like you don't want to give it one note. So if you have one character pulled back, don't pull everybody back. But again, that's a trend right now, and we go through those all the time, and that's part of the acting process also, is we are the conduit for what the script writer provides, mm-hmm. and what the director provides, and what the producer's intentions are. And even though we put part of ourselves into it, we are all subject to what the whole creative process is.
Yeah.
Otherwise we don't have
a team effort, like anything.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what's interesting is, like, and you are right, the subdued nature has become much more the norm.
Sure.
Especially with anything that comes out to Netflix and whatnot. It is about the more dry... I put to Wes Anderson as kind of a big influence on this. Very slick, dry delivery that kind of comes across. But not gone are the days of the exaggerated, the aruga, if you will, as I like to call it, where... like, the eyes can pop out, and therefore the tongue can slap, and you start yelling like a wolf to a degree. Now, granted, we have to keep it in context, but...
Yeah, no, but I get that.
But I appreciate that you have collaborated with these people to create... I like to call it a gateway into the past. Like, I just had a nephew, and, like, one of the things that I would love to share with him is that love of it, and the best way that I could possibly do that is take him to see one of those shows.
Sure.
Because then
I can
explain to him, like, because then he could just ask the questions, and I can explain, like, well, we used to record in a studio. We used to have this, like, booth, like a pegboard, and you would record into there. And I've lived with this subject my entire life, so it's actually very refreshing to get to talk to someone like you.
And I think the other thing about, it's like listening to a good musician, you hear not just the music, you hear the grace notes. And the grace notes are different for every different kind of genre. So when we're looking at doing a live performance, you have an audience, which means that the line has, if you're doing a character voice, it still has to be understandable to somebody in the back row. So it has to be a little slower and a little broader. It also has to make sure that you don't do your lines so quickly and so flat that they don't have an opportunity to laugh. So you have to, again, everything is for a different audience, has different kind of beats, different stuff that you do.
There's a theatrical attribute to it anyway because you're on that stage.
And that's, so as you're working with a group of people like the Herd, part of the situation with the Herd is getting people to understand different approaches for different genres. And there will be some stage actors who get it, but there'll be some other actors who want to be very modern and say their lines quickly, and you go, okay. But if you lose the line and they don't hear the line, then it doesn't count. So we have kind of, you have to combine all that stuff. It's crazy. And again, what was weird to me, I will never admit I said this, so this is not public, this is private, obviously, that when they did replace the parrot in Aladdin, Robin Williams was very big and broad as the genie. And they replaced the parrot with Gilbert Gottfried.
Right.
And there was similarity between the two voice prints as well as the two approaches. And that's typically what you don't do in animation. Now, the movie was a huge success, and so obviously it worked, and everybody bought it.
Right.
That was a very chancy deal that they chose to take that chance, because typically they want enough difference between characters that they're easily defined one from the other. They broke that rule, obviously successfully.
Yeah, and Gilbert obviously has his very definite style.
Oh, yeah.
And he's made very clear. Yeah. Actually, and if you listen, I don't know if you've listened to his podcast, Amazing Colossal.
Mm.
He talks to a lot of older actors from that, or at least the sons of older actors and stuff.
Okay.
He talks to Sarah Karloff and Bela Jr., which is interesting to get their stories and stuff like that.
Sure. Oh, sure.
But this era, but like going back to the voice artist element of it and whatnot, working with Disney,
because
this isn't the first time I've heard this story of them changing stuff mid-production.
Yeah.
Switching things around.
Yes.
Now, when you let's use the stove, for example, in Beauty and the Beast.
Yes, sir.
When you get that, like, revelation and whatnot, like, what goes into it? They don't notify you or anything? They just say flat out, like, it's your guess is as good as mine?
It's, again, combination of situations. In that case, they had already recorded the character. It was weird. They had just released me from one job. They weren't happy with the character, so... again, we just went in, everybody went in and did what we felt the character was. But Dawes used to teach something, and I've been called on this by some other voice actors and a couple of producers who said, you can't do that. Dawes' philosophy was, it's like pool. They want something, and you try to give them what they want, but then it's like having English on the pool ball. He said, so you just don't quite give them exactly what they want. You skew it off to like one side or the other in your perception. So it's his thesis being 98% of the actors given the same... conditions of the script, given the same conditions to work to, will come up with something that's almost identical. So his idea was to do something that was right for the part, but enough different that it stood apart from everybody else. And it worked for him, though people said, you can't do that. It absolutely worked for Dawes and made him the legend that he was. So I think, like a lot of things, when I teach people to do this, a lot of it's about coming up with your approach, which may be different than everybody else's approach. And if it works for you, that's great. It works for you. The old Rodney Dangerfield story, I'm sure you've heard the biography. His act was a total failure.
Yeah.
He tried to reinvent himself, came up with this sad sacky thing that he does. Yeah, I don't know, you know, geez. and went to a club that he'd played at before, and the guy said, I'm redoing my act, and the guy had a cancellation. So he said, okay, I'll let you have the night. And he said, what's your new name? And he said, I don't know. And the guy said, well, you got to come up with a name. He said, I don't know. Find something in the phone book. And the guy opened the phone book and went, you're Rodney Dangerfield. So, yeah. So we are constantly, every day, reinventing ourselves by what we do. So, and we fall into patterns. So the idea is, and what makes this a great business is, to always continue and find new places to go with it, ways to challenge ourselves to do things that we aren't used to doing. That's what makes it interesting, is when it's hard. You know?
Awesome. Well, Brian, thank you so much for coming to sit down with us.
You guys are going to actually debut... I went to the Los Angeles Comic Con with the 30th anniversary of DuckTales panel.
Oh, nice.
And had a marvelous time with my friends. Also ran into all sorts of people that I'd worked with over the years. I was so excited by that con, and I love this con here as well. I wrote and produced the rhythm track to a song about going to a con.
Really?
And then I had like 6 different guitar players who played with me on stuff I'd recorded in L.A. I found a guy here who's got 3 different bands and teaches guitar. And I said, I need a guitar part. I brought him in to play one part. He played 3 parts in 3 different styles. I used most of all 3. And so I have this collection. It's called the FanCon Collection that I just debuted. And the lead song has got a crazy intro to it from a guy who got repossessed because he didn't pay the exorcist bill. And then we do the FanCon Come On song. And then we have like about 15 tracks of con-appropriate songs, everything from vampire love songs to a guy who's dating an alien to weird stuff like that. Not done comically, but done to rock.
Awesome.
And you're going to like play it and stuff, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. How can people pick this up?
So you can go to thebriancummings.com on the website and email me. I will have digital copies available. But quite frankly, what's cool about this at cons is this is designed to be a collectible item. So it's autographed and in a nice package and stuff for the collector as well as people just like music.
And we'll put a picture up of this, too. So
cool.
Like you can see that.
Cool.
You see Brian at a con, and like this is something to pick up.
Yeah.
And then so you know, like, and I can't wait to actually listen to this. I like the idea of him getting repossessed.
Yeah, it's okay. Well, and I understand with cons, they're noisy, so you can't really play it for people to hear. So what was also cool is I sent copies out to a number of my friends, and some of the greatest people in voiceover, some producers and musicians, all gave reviews about the track. I didn't publish it. No, I was going to say I didn't publish the negative reviews. I didn't get one negative review, actually. So I published all the good ones that I could squeeze on, and it turned out to be, I think, a fun deal. So I'm excited. I'm going to go ask myself for my own autograph later. Can I leave something I do with little kids at every con that I do? I can teach both of you guys to do a character voice in 30 seconds. Now I can't do this at cons because everybody will know. So you want to do it? Just don't be careful because I don't want you to injure yourself. All right. All you have to do, there's a famous comedian way, way back on the old Steve Allen show named Dayton Allen. And what he did is he took his tongue and stuck it between his teeth on the side of his mouth. And then he had to talk really clearly, which makes you talk slower and sound really dumb. And you can do that voice. And his running gag was, that's all he said. He didn't do any, he didn't do any crazy material. He just looked at the camera and said, why not? And it was this bit. Instant character voice. There you go.
Yeah, it's pretty much me. The only difference is I didn't learn. Now I know the secret.
Stick my tongue. It's the just don't bite your tongue off because you can only do it once then.
You hear that, Brad?
See?
It's we can all.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody, why not? Okay, we're done. Signing off now. Hasta la bye-bye. Send $3 million to me, Brian Cummings, virtue of my WhatsApp, and everybody instead of sending you a CD. Thank you.
Actually, the CD was $3 million, but we've discounted it, so it's $2,990 or so. So it's really like 15 bucks. Okay, my math's lousy, but the CD's good. Bye.
Thank you so much.
You guys, you're awesome. It was fun. Thank you. Okay.
The urge to go to a con.
Got a good feeling about this.
Yeah, yeah. It's the end of the week. The work's all done. We'll be taking it off. Have us some fun. Gotta get to a con. Get the fantasy on. So come on along till the weekend's gone. Getting down to the con. Well, the sun's up high. I had my load. Gonna hit the road to where everyone goes. I'm off to the con. Yeah, I'm doing the con. When it's said and done, give me big time fun. Baby, get me to a con, yeah. Make your old man grin, drive your baby wild. When you get to the car, got your old freak on. Looking oh so good with your costume on. Gotta take you to the car. Fame and money's all the same. Come and buy a honeycomb, sign my name. Just a hit in the con. We'll be rocking the con. And I'll sing my song if you come alone. Get down to the con. Baby, get me to the con, yeah. Come on. podcast play on. You'll be rocking the gauntlet. Mud Mac comics when I was a kid. I'm going to what I gotta do.
Thanks for listening to another fantastic interview at Denver Comic Con 2018. We had an amazing time, and we look forward to seeing you again next year.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Real Nerds Podcast. Real Nerds Podcast is a production of Nebulous Visions Multimedia. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill and Plan 9 Studios for our kick-ass theme song. Also, if you're in the Denver area and you're looking for a cool place to see movies, we see them at the Alamo Draft House in Littleton and now also in Sloan's Lake. Thank you to Colorado Coins, Cards, and Comics for supplying us with all our comic needs, especially you, Andrew. You know who you are. And a big shout out to James's mom. I'm giving you an electronic hug that you can feel through the airwaves. Thanks for listening, and have a nice day.